And now, tonight's featured reader is Sarah Clausen. Sarah is a Winnipeg poet and fiction writer. Her eighth and most recent poetry collection is called The Tree of Life, published by Turnstone Press just this fall. Her poetry has received two national magazine awards, as well as the Canadian Authors Association Award for Poetry and the Gerald Lampert Memorial Award. She has also published two short story collections and one novel, The Wittenbergs. Welcome, Sarah. Oh, Sarah, you have to unmute yourself.
Yes. Oh, now I'm here. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you very much for inviting me to Speak in Crow. I've read for Speak in Crow previously. The first time was in a venue on Academy Road. I don't know. I'm sure nobody here remembers that venue. Once it was on Portage. You do? Once on Portage Avenue. And now here we are on Zoom. And we're glad for it. We can continue with some good activities, even despite the circumstances. So tonight, I'm going to be reading from my book, as Joanne said, The Tree of Life, which was launched exactly 2 months ago on Zoom. So I live in the northeast corner of Winnipeg, and it doesn't take me very long, 15 minutes, to get to Birdsell Park. And by the way, I was telling Joanne earlier that I've been looking outside through this window, which is a northeast direction window, and I can see the moon. And I watched it earlier today. It was huge, rising above the trees. Now it's not so huge, but it's still up there. Anyway, I used to ski, cross-country ski at Birdsell Park, and if I were still doing that, I would be very perturbed. Here it is December, and there's so little snow. Anyway, the first poem that I'm going to read is from the first section. It's called Arrivals, and the setting is Birdsell Park. The poem is in three parts, but I'm just going to read two parts of it. Arrivals. On a morning mild and monochrome, we come to the park to ski. The trail is groomed, wax properly applied. We get a good glide. Barren birches form a ghostly honor guard. A patch of black, tattered plastic caught in a forked branch is a raven scrutinizing us. We had not planned to think of death, its cold finality. It is the enemy we want to wrestle down, avoid, or if we could, destroy. Our passage through the wooded park is swift. We know each twist and turn, know when to swerve to avoid the oak that always takes us by surprise. We have never so far failed to return whole to the parking lot, to our SUVs, our city, our very lives. Two. Emerging from the birches, we come to a clearing. Our trail dips into a snowy bowl just when the sun burns through the mist and monochrome gives way to glitter. We are blinded. We blink. Arranged along the opposite slope of the bowl, more vision than mirage, a silent, sentient trinity. We stop in our tracks, trapped by beauty. Three exquisitely sculpted bodies, six alert ears, three pairs of brown eyes watching us. Who planned this perfect composition, drew the outline with a steady hand, gave shape and form, applied warm colors, breathed life into it? Who set the schedule for arrival at this moment, at this indentation? We dare not make a move. All of these poems were written before the pandemic, but the pandemic hasn't been the first crisis that the world has experienced. The history of our planet is a history of many such crises, some more than worse than others. The next poem I'm going to read is about a crisis, or it's based on a story about a crisis, which in this case happens to be drought. I was looking for a poem that may in some way speak to the pandemic, even though the poems are written before that. So this might or might not do that. It's based on a story from the Hebrew scriptures where there's a drought and the prophet who is starving gets fed by not crows, but ravens. The poem is called, And Yet. The city of refuge is burning. Smoke and panic fill the air. Someone says, let not your hearts be troubled. Words easily spoken, a mantra to quiet the quaking heart, a line of poetry. Fear makes things fall apart. Knees like water, the heart troubled. Even a prophet questions the chances. And yet, beside the brook, the ravens. And yet, the widow and the widow's son. Don't be afraid, the prophet dares to say. Dip into the flour. Tip the jug of oil. Bake bread as usual. Apparently, the pandemic has spawned a great many bread makers. I'm going to move now to a section that's entitled Perchance to Dream. Dreams are wonderful, provided they're not anxiety dreams. The dreams in this section are not necessarily mine. They're dreams of various people, dreams I've heard, and most likely embellished to some degree. So this one is called Bus. When once again you board the bus, first class, built for comfort and speed, tinted windows, take a look at your fellow travelers, asleep or dreaming. Hard to tell which head holds plans to overthrow the government, terrorize the world, hijack this bus when it leaves the city, heading into open prairie. Hard to tell which bulging bag in the overhead bin is crammed with contraband, drugs, guns, honed knives illicitly obtained, forged documents, explosives ready to detonate. You must not panic. Why not close your eyes? Choose your options. Count sheep. Count countries never visited. Your very favorite things. Your many blessings. The bus driver will turn lights off. You must not fear the moonless night, rumors of war in foreign countries. The huge, hard hands of a stranger breathing noisily beside you. From the same section, a poem called Tree. I dreamt a tree, neither pine nor palm, in a country I had never traveled. Storms that decimated poplar, birch, and willow could not disturb its sturdy canopy. Its fruit ripened where the hungry gathered, where refugees and strangers rested. I dreamt a slither in the grass beside a river that flows through a garden. When I awoke, the tree woke with me. Its leaves shone green in vacant spaces of the day, at the crossroads of simplicity and fear. Lethargy and reconciliation, Alpha and Omega. When I was teaching, I used to, I didn't have enough time to do all the reading I wanted to do, so I would quite often binge on reading during the summer. And I remember sometimes I would choose a certain topic. One summer it was Churchill, Winston Churchill. And one summer it was Sylvia Plath. So I'm going to read a poem called Reading Sylvia Plath. One summer I read Sylvia Plath, her late and early poems, letters home, biographies and what the critics wrote about her talent, marriage, forays into beekeeping, utter darkness. A morning dove claimed a perch in a branch of the ash tree under which I lounged, tackling one more point of view, another analysis. I was forming my own opinion of Plath, who crawled under the steps, waded far out into dark water. The bright sun hurt my eyes. I was distracted by the dazzling wings of a dragonfly, cloying scent of petunias, shrill bell on the bike of the ice cream boy. It was a hot summer, unrelieved by rain. I read past yew trees, tulips. I arrived at the sealed-off room, food left for the children, gas turned on. The mourning dove had moved and built her nest elsewhere. This last weekend marked the beginning of the 4 weeks of Lent that precede Christmas. And all over the world, I expect people were lighting the first Advent candle, which has been connected with the idea of hope, which is something the world needs. I have written a poem about Advent, and it's in four parts, naturally, because there are 4 weeks of Advent, and I'm going to read the first two parts. So Advent 1, I wake to a world riddled with mystery, darkness shot through with the first ray of light. December, and still the ladybug wants to shelter in that thin place between glass and the wood frame of the patio door. I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, we had all these tiny little ladybugs that came from who knows where, and we didn't know what to do with them, and then in the fall, we all wanted into the house. So Advent 2, look, a table spread with star-shaped sprinkled sugar cookies, a shimmer of delight. Who knows what this portends, what miracle it points to, something. Is pending. Any minute now, the mystery will be revealed. Perhaps not wholly understood, but wholly, wholly. I'll follow that up with a Christmas poem, and this one's called Magnificat. Snow had fallen overnight on roofs of suburban bungalows, on stiff spirea hedges, on rows of overflowing garbage bins. Blackbirds occupy a snow-lined poplar branch. Magnificent in winter white are five wolves cast in bronze and set in fierce pursuit beside the freeway. In Bethlehem, there is no snow. Pilgrims armed with bucket lists crowd the place where 20 centuries ago, they believe a boy was born. The amazed girl mother nestled him in straw, a child as perfect as a snowflake. Mary never knew the crunch of snow beneath her feet, sleep needling her face. What she was given to know poured from her mouth like praise. The destitute, she dared to say, will not always hunger and thirst. Nor will the meek be scattered. What's high will be brought low. She might as well have said, bronze wolves will be set free. Spirea hedges shout loud hallelujahs, and snow-capped lids of garbage bins clap noisily for joy. I discovered not that long ago that December the 28th is the designated Feast of the Holy Innocents in the church calendar. This refers to a story in the Gospels where Herod, the king, was quite alarmed when he heard one of the wise men say that there was a child born and that child was destined to become king. Herod was not amused. He was very scared. And he had all the little male babies of a certain age slaughtered. This terrible story has became the subject of many paintings centuries ago. Children are still in need of protection, as we all know, during our time. And my book has a great many children in it. I'm glad they're there. I don't think I'm reading many children poems tonight, but anyway, they are our future, and so they belong in our lives and in our poetry. This is called Feast of the Holy Innocents. How shall we observe the day a tyrant, driven by rage, unholy fear of losing power or face, unleashed slaughter? We are too outraged to pray, too downcast for singing. Tears are futile, the usual wringing of hands pathetic. Rage cannot bring back the dead, nor save the living. We know we should unclench our fists, take each other by the hand, light candles, and with one voice speak reverently of the sacred names of those who hunger and thirst, who flee but can never escape, who wait in vain at borders with their hungry children, the names of those who have lost or never had. Sadly, we don't know their names, and if we did, might mispronounce them. We want to hold them like we hold those burnt down candles with unsteady hands in our unsteady hearts. Speaking of hope and the candle of hope, I'm going to read a poem called Hope. If I look out the window, I can see not only the moon, but I can see the river. I mean, I could if it weren't so dark tonight. And I often look out my window and see if the river is still there. Hope. In the morning, I come to the window to escape slaughter in dark Africa, Armageddon in the Middle East, a rapist at large in my neighborhood. The river has not stopped flowing north to the lake. Gulls are scavenging, buffaloheads diving. I have reason to hope I may catch sight of the coyote loping along the bank. A hawk hovers, hungry, wings wide open as if in benediction. It's time for breakfast. Dry cereal, milk from the fridge, an orange bright as the sun. Radio off, kettle on. I breathe words of gratitude and pray the wary coyote, rising from sleep or hunger, will drag his wild shadow out of the willows down to the river. So I will close with the last poem in the book. It's part of a series of poems about trees, and this poem is called Green. That tree with a crimson circle on its bark is marked for destruction, doomed by Dutch elm disease. The emerald ash borer has moved into our neighborhood. We are afraid. We scour the internet to find salvation for our city's canopy, a rot-resistant species we might import if our winters weren't so long, our summers not so dry, our resources not spent on fractured infrastructure, drug deaths, healthcare chaos, and how many refugees before we slam the door. The tree we want grows beside streams of water where its roots go deep and drink. Its leaves are always green. From its pinnacle, the eagle watches the world. In its branches, the sparrow builds her nest. Thank you, everybody.